SV Pod is brought to you by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. Welcome, it's SV Pod. Through the years, if you listen to SVP and Russillo, if you've watched our version of SportsCenter, you know that one of our very favorite people talking about college football is a guy by the name of Spencer Hall. Every Day Should Be Saturday is where we discovered him years ago, the college football blog. He was sort of a frontiersman, which is fitting, giving his love of bison and things of that nature. He came on our show in overalls. He's grown a beard that is beyond unruly. But honest to God, he's one of the funniest, most brilliant minds writing about any topic, but particularly college football. And he is joining us on the SEC Network for a revamped Thinking Out Loud, which premieres with the new cast the 28th of September, 7 Eastern time on the SEC Network. Ladies and gentlemen, our friend Spencer Hall. Spencer, it has been too long. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing as well as a person could do in 2020, which means that, like any answer I give you about football today, circumstances may dictate a change in my status by the minute or possibly by the second.
Understood. There are things to get to that are important. I feel like the most important thing to get to on this day is what it is that you and I have against milk. You tweeted earlier that Jim Harbaugh is a man who willingly, I'm paraphrasing, wakes up every day and drinks a glass of milk. And I just nodded knowingly. And instantly there was, as is the case, I should say now in the world, battle lines are drawn. It's the milk people and the anti-milk people. I'm solidly anti-milk. I want to know, when's the last time you had a big frosty glass of milk?
I don't think I've ever consumed a single frosty glass of milk in my life. Like I don't think I've ever willingly gone to the fridge, pulled out the carton of milk, and poured it up. I remember when I started lifting weights, and I probably lifted weights like off and on with varying degrees of seriousness for about 25 years. And initially, what do they tell you if you want to gain a lot of weight? Super old school thing to do is this, called Go Mad, gallon of milk a day. You're supposed to drink a gallon of milk a day. And I thought, yeah, bro, let's give it a shot. Mm-hmm. I didn't get a pint into it. I didn't. Now, I understand from everyone who's done this, and if you're a strength coach or a meathead listening to this, you're going to nod along. There's some very drastic side effects to drinking a gallon of milk a day, and it's not exactly the cleanest bulk, okay? You're pretty much just going to be wandering around. It's more of a, if I put it this way, it's more of a Bryson DeChambeau bulk than it is a Hollywood bulk, okay? You're just going to get big, you're going to get slabby, and there's going to be some very drastic digestive side effects, okay? For me, I never even got to that stage. I had to dirty bulk the old respectable way, which was, double hamburgers from Wendy's. That's pretty much how I did it. That is definitely not, I didn't go the go mad route. So yeah, I've just never been about milk. I can always, you know what it is? It's for me this, I can always smell that it comes from a cow. I'm always like, man, this came from a big smelly animal. I don't want to drink it.
Nope, I'm with you. When I was younger, when I was growing drastically, like high school years, I would go through milk like a knife through butter. Quoting Bricktop from Snatch. But I've told this story, I think, somewhere through the years on radio, maybe. But I got to Maryland, and I moved into Ellicott Hall and went to the dining hall, and I realized, wait, they got fountain soda unlimited every day, and I don't believe that I've had a glass of milk. I have not. I haven't had so much as a sip of milk since like my freshman year of college in the mid 80s. So it's been a long time. Stanford Steve, milk, yay or nay?
Yay, but not glasses of it. Spencer talks about the old days of gaining mass. I went the Rocky Balboa route. Mm-hmm. I went raw egg in a cup, and that didn't last long. And I'm milk for cereal. But you don't put milk in your cereal.
I eat handfuls of it dry every morning. My children,
like a wolf.
Like an animal. It's horrifying. Well, nothing that I eat isn't like an animal. I need to sort that out. I'm going to
die. Spencer, I grabbed dinner the other night for us, and Scott got a burger. And I said, how was the burger? And he literally looked at me. It was gone. And I'd give him 28 seconds. It was gone. And he looked at me, and he just said, I don't know.
That's good though. You don't want to be off your feed. You want to be eating enthusiastically, man. That's good.
Well, but now
I'm not even exaggerating.
No, no, it's true. That was the answer. I don't know. But we were waiting for DeChambeau, and at any moment we could have gotten the green light that it was time to talk to him. And so I didn't – time was a-wasting. I didn't have any time to be just, you know, savoring the meal. I needed to annihilate it, and I did, and I don't know if it was any good. But Spencer and I solidly in the anti-milk camp. I mean, I'll eat it on cereal, but honestly, the last time – I don't recall the last time I poured it into a bowl. Do you eat cereal, Spencer?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And
what do you put on it?
Now, I will use a bit to wet it. That's about it. And I got to admit, the stuff in the bottom at the end, I do not drink it. Like, I know I've seen some
Scott
people.
Scott doesn't either.
No, it's disgusting.
Down it. Like, the happiest time in my life food-wise is when I lived overseas. I lived in East Asia for a while, about a year and a half. And I will tell you, like, dairy's just nowhere. It's just absolutely nowhere. Like, in Korea, you'll get a lot of cheese. That's about it.
Now we make the always easy pivot from East Asian cheese to college football and the SEC and you being part of Thinking Out Loud, which, look, I'm thrilled about this. Our affinity for you dates back to, I don't even recall when it started. It feels like it's been at least – been more than a decade with Every Day Should Be Saturday, and you're covering this sport that we all love so much, and now being part of this, what role is it, what sensibilities can we expect you'll be bringing to the forum?
I think what we're going to bring to a discussion of the SEC is this: that we have Brandon Boykin for the players' perspective, we have Richard and I to provide, I think, a nice blend of the journalistic and the internet observers. And we have Alyssa to provide not only the point guard and coordination, but also I think the very important perspective of a South Carolina fan, which she is, which is that none of this matters. and we're all going to die someday, and you're doomed. Like, that's what a South Carolina fan brings to the broadcast. No.
It's true. When they had Spurrier, it was like, well – you know, what they were just happy to kind of matter. And how much did they really matter?
Man, they were like a broke guy who wins the lottery. They were like, well, might not be here tomorrow. Spend it while we got it. Let's do it. I love that too. Like, and when it all went down, they were like, well, we've been here too. Yep. Been up, been down. Let's go. Like,
easy come, easy go. But look, you're not the biggest, how do I put this? You hate Will Muschamp. Just say it.
You know what? I can't hate anyone. I will say this.
Not in 2020.
No. And I don't hate anyone. It's. I will say that the way he does things is not the way that I, as a fan, would really enjoy watching it get done. I will say this. Occasionally, that form of football, the blunt object school of football, it can be pretty arresting. It can be, you know, if you like, I don't enjoy watching a 17-10 game, but I could laugh through a 17-10 game, right? Like. Yeah.
And
it's
you
amazing.
Did.
It, and I you did. Like, I will say, like, one of the great thrills of the 2019 college football season was watching South Carolina with their third string quarterback just obstruct Georgia. That was it. It was like watching, I don't know if you remember the old Porky Pig, Daffy Duck cartoon where Daffy Duck will say, thrust, parry. He'll try to like fight him like he's Robin Hood with a stick, and he gets really enthusiastic and tries a bunch of moves. And then Porky Pig just sticks his finger out and like Daffy Duck flips halfway across the screen. All right. That's an elaborate way of explaining this. The more you try against that school of football, the more you attempt and the more ambition you have, the worse you do. And sometimes that's really, really fun to watch. I don't know if it's exactly what I would ever want for my football team again, but I really enjoy this. I think Will Muschamp at South Carolina is in many ways a perfect alignment of school, coach, and approach, because South Carolina, generally speaking, if they just try to obstruct and they just try to be real tough and they just try to like make one or two plays a game and the rest of the time just make life as hard as possible for you, that's a very good approach given South Carolina's historical profile in the SEC. They are not a power. They have never been a power. They have one championship to their name. That was an ACC championship in the late 60s. Since then, it's just been South Carolina football. It's been a struggle. So in many ways, that kind of lack of ambition, that kind of commitment to like a very low margin school of football and a coach who is like all heart and not much on the strategic side of football and the offense. Like, just no, like the kind of guy who still believes that like passing is bad. That's very good for South Carolina, I think.
And see, Spencer could give you this on every single school of the SEC, every single one. Like that, well, I was just off the top of his dome. This is the kind of depth of knowledge and passion and understanding and commitment to SEC lifestyle and brand that Spencer brings to our network, Thinking Out Loud. Again, it's the 28th of September that it begins, 7 Eastern time on the SEC network.
Along those lines of South Carolina, Spencer, any words of advice for fans from Missouri or Arkansas this year?
Do you have hobbies? I think hobbies are a great distraction because your football games, they might get out of hand, particularly Arkansas. I think Arkansas is much better suited for this, by the way.
You do?
Because I do. Because one, they've been stress tested in terms of misery recently, like deep, deep wells of misery.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you're not dead already as an Arkansas fan in your heart, if you're not burnt to the core, this year will be nothing, because at least you have the optimism of, oh, it's a new coach, right? It's not another year of like, we could just, this is a practice. This is a gimme. Even better still, it's 2020.
Yeah.
Nothing is going, you might not even play half your games. That's a reality. You might have testing and quarantine decimate your roster to the point where you won't even have to play the games. If and when that happens, you know who wins? Arkansas.
Yeah.
Because Arkansas, not only, like, this is the comedy of comedies. Not only does Arkansas have virtually no hope of winning a normal year's worth of games, right? Like, we're talking 2-3 wins if you're looking at a roster, and they probably would have been real happy with that if they'd had a normal schedule. But instead, they got hammered with the absolute, like they got the, like, wipeout obstacle course of scheduling. They got as difficult a schedule as I can remember being handed out to a team that proportionally could not handle it. So if they get a game canceled, awesome. We got some workouts in. We got some lifting in. We got some naps. Got some good rest. Remember, recovery is important, Arkansas. Recovery is important. Missouri's going to have a harder time of it, because not only are you switching coaching regimes, but again, you're going to be doing this and trying to put together a new program in a year when you might be missing 10 players. You might be missing 20. It depends on how the week goes. You know, the opponent for everybody here is going to be the virus and following the procedures around the virus. And that's not going to be easy for anybody. Ask Kansas State. We were talking about it pregame here, Steve, that Kansas State had like 10 out, right? There was a 10 or 12.
Yeah, they got 12 back, and then they lost another 10.
And then they lost another 10. So, hey, you're up 2. That's every team, man. That's every
team. It really is. And I mean, as we're taping this on a Tuesday, we see Notre Dame had 4 positives, and they're not going to practice. I mean, this like, we can laugh, and it is, you know, I'm just picturing Big Sam Pittman out there at Arkansas, and that, what's his, he's got that internet thing when they would get a recruit down at Georgia. I forget, was it an oh yeah or some kind of a.
Yeah, was he a yes sir?
Yeah,
yes,
it was a yes sir. That's
yeah,
it.
Yes sir.
Yes sir. Not a whole lot of yes sir down there in Arkansas this year, I don't think. But honestly, who the hell knows? And that's really been my sort of mantra for everything, Spencer, as it relates to life in this hellscape of 2020. And I do feel, it's rare that when we talk I'm serious, but I'm serious about this. I feel that that even though we understand philosophically that at any moment the plug can get pulled and you have to shut down and you can't play a week or who knows, maybe longer, I feel like what it represents, particularly in the SEC, a season, whatever it might be, was very necessary just to the psyche of the populace. I mean, how would you best frame what it represents? And I'm not talking about it just means more and making fun of the ad. I'm talking about the real nuts and bolts people that live this. I feel like people would have not been able to function had there not been some kind of SEC football.
Yeah, and to be clear, I don't think it's going to be full function. I don't think it's going to feel normal. It's not going to feel right. It's going to be you know, Splenda for the sugar. It's going to be a substitute for the, you know, glory and glamour of a full season. You're not going to get anything resembling your standard college football season. You're not going to get anything resembling your standard SEC season, because in many places tailgating's banned. You're not going to get, or highly controlled, or as in Georgia, they said, oh, you can only have get-togethers in the parking lots. I really don't know who any adult in the room is in the state of Georgia who would say with a straight face that you had actually outlawed tailgating when you said, yeah, but y'all can just get together in the parking lot in groups of 10. Okay.
Okay.
Sure. That's going to work. You know how orderly and well-run things are down here. Okay. Just generally speaking, that's going to be good. People are sure going to be counting and using their rulers there. No, I think it has a very large importance, period. I think that for people for whom this is how you turn the horn through the season, and this is a rite and a ritual, this is how you keep up with, you know, old friends, this is how you in some cases network, right?
Absolutely. Like, hey,
see you at the game, we'll talk about that business thing. That does actually happen. And just for everybody who has this as, you know, who regards this as a real emotional bellwether or anchor in their lives, it's going to be a diminished version of that. I think having it was emotionally important. And whether or not you thought the season should have happened, it's happening anyway. And now the real challenge is going to be getting through it and appreciating how unusual and strange it is while trying to somehow enjoy the games if and when they happen. Like, whole thing's got an asterisk on it. And I think that's easy to process after the fact. It's very going to be very strange to live it. It's going to be very strange for me to not go to Athens in a year. Like, Athens is right up the road.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to just, you know, you could just on a whim go up to Athens. It's a delightful place to just hang out. You don't even have to go to the game, and you can come back. That's out. There's not going to be an Ole Miss Grove situation at all. There will be no LSU tailgating, which I feel like is like, that's like canceling Genghis Khan's favorite party. You know, like, it's like canceling, you know, the barbarian soiree, and you're not going to get it this year. So you'll miss all those things. And
what will you miss most, Spencer? I mean, if you and I realize that's kind of an impossible question. It's like trying to pick out, you know, which one of your boys would you say first, you know? But
I mean, I will probably miss, I think what I will miss is I will miss the first like semi-cold tailgate, and down here we mean that by like, you know, 55 degrees. Maybe 50 degrees. But I always thought that was like a great turn when everybody actually put on like a sweater. I'll miss the cocktail party, as oppressive and intense an experience as that can be. I'll miss the cocktail party because the cocktail party is outlandish and something always, I don't know anybody who's gone down there who hasn't had one thing go at least sideways. Like, where did I park my car? Well, it turns out it was towed and you're going to spend the next 2 days tracking it down in Duval, you know? Or, you know, you saw somebody do something real crazy. Yeah, I'll miss all of the little sort of things around various game day experiences. Oh yeah. And I'll miss, like, you know, I'll miss your late night Waffle House stop. I'll miss all of the little sort of tangential personal experiences that go around the things that kind of make the season for me. And by season, I mean football season and fall. Like, those two things are inextricable. They go hand in hand.
Florida or Georgia?
I'm going to go Florida.
Wow. All right. Why?
I'm going to go Florida because the quarterback situation is set. And I think until you know what's under the hood at Georgia, the departure of Jamie Newman opting out of the season really disrupted their quarterback picture. I know that JT Daniels is real good. He's fantastic. It's been a minute since he's had any real playing time. So until you solve the most important position in the game, then I have to by default select Florida. Now, if you said, hey, Georgia's set at quarterback, it's Georgia. It's UGA. It's like deeper too. Like, this is also an issue. The teams to bet on are the teams that have the most resources in terms of roster depth. Georgia is a deeper team at this point in both teams' evolution. So you'd probably have to take Georgia by default. But at the moment, without an absolutely set quarterback situation, much less one that's going from year one to year two with Kyle Trask, I'll take Florida.
You know what's amazing about that entire dialogue is that the Georgia quarterback situation is unsettled because a Wake Forest transfer decided to opt out, and the USC transfer five-star guy may not be the guy. Like, there's, you know, like, just, it's just incredible to, like, the Georgia quarterback situation over the past 5 years has been worthy of like an entire shutdown full cast or thousands of words when you look at who they got. And Easton comes from Washington, then he gets beat out by a guy who then Fields comes, then he's not going to get on the field because Fromm's good, and then Fields ends up being what, maybe the second pick in the draft behind Lawrence. He leaves. Here comes a Wake Forest transfer. You know what I'm saying? Like, just the quarterback position at the University of Georgia is an astounding melodrama. I can't even make sense of it.
That's, by the way, coming off of, what, 20 years of a lack of drama?
Yeah.
And, you know, stately handoffs from your David Greens, you know.
Mike Bobo.
To your
Bobo.
Mike Bobo, to your Zyers, to your
Who's
Aaron
now calling
Murray's.
Plays at South Carolina.
correct. By the way, like a big pass first, pass heavy guy who came out for South Carolina. Remember what I was saying? Your lack of ambition. What are they going to do this year? Well, you know, first thing Bubba comes out and says is, you know, going slow can be real hard on a defense too.
We're gonna huddle.
We're gonna huddle up. We're gonna look at that clock. Maybe, you know, open a tin of cocktail weenies, have a nice little meat snack in the middle of the field, pass it around to the boys. Leisurely stroll up as that clock goes 3-2-1 and snap the ball for a halfback dive. That's
meat snacks are not to be underestimated, the importance of a meat snack.
If you told me South Carolina actually sent their offense out there to like eat some form of processed meat product in between plays to ensure that they were not going to snap the ball too quickly this year, I would 100% believe you. 100%. They want that game to be as short as possible. Like I guarantee, like South Carolina may play a game under 3 hours this year. They may have like the 2 hour 55 minute game.
If I look at the SEC West, Spencer, and I ask you the most interesting thing, I feel like the list is not quite infinite, but it is as long as a CVS receipt. The thing in the SEC West that is the most interesting to you as we begin play there's what?
Ole Miss, like 100%. That is the most interesting team, with a runner up being LSU's rebuilding project. LSU is a little more interesting because, hey, we all watched a lot of LSU. We all know they're freakishly talented. We all know that last year, I think on the SEC this morning with Peter Burns and Chris Doering, I said that LSU last year was like, they were like the guy who'd always worked out but had never quite gotten his diet right. And then all of a sudden they discovered, hey, Joe Brady, low carb, we're good. And now they were just like ripped and unstoppable. You know, they're interesting and the succession is interesting, but part two is always like slightly less intriguing than something like, and I quote, Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Lane Kiffin has been all over the map as a head coach. And I mean, literally and figuratively, all over the map. He has been very successful. He's had good seasons at USC. Which I know USC fans tend to forget, but they did have some success under Lane Kiffin, and they did recruit really well under Lane Kiffin. Mm-hmm. His one season at Tennessee is so fascinating to me because they were so much better than they really should have been, and they were so much better than people remember. Jonathan Crompton was a very, very troubled quarterback with a very mixed record who ended up having a really good season. Right under
they
Lane
were competitive.
Kiffin's
the people didn't think they'd be competitive because he went down there and said, when we beat Florida and sing Rocky Top all night, it's gonna be great. And people like, was he medicated? Like, it just nothing. Mm-hmm. It turned out that they actually were far, far more competitive, far more quickly than anyone thought that they had a right to be.
Yeah, and with players that weren't his, and that to me is the most interesting, you know, flag for why you should be interested in Ole Miss this year, because he's had success early on in his tenures and with other people's players. I think sometimes the hardest thing to do for anyone in any field is to sustain success once you've come in and made it work. Some guys are very good at coming into any situation and saying, I have these tools, I can make it work, right? Like like somebody who can look in a fridge and go, okay, y'all, we're having fried rice. I can just cook it up and it's gonna work, right? And it's delicious. But if you give them a couple of more days, the hardest thing to sustain is a menu, is a restaurant, is a franchise, right? I think that's why we always talk about, hey, coaches want to be organized. You know, what's your 5-year plan? What's your 10-year plan? You know, coaches need to have those answers because those are the really difficult things to do down at, like, hardest things to do in football, get from 10 wins to 11 wins, right? 10 wins, that's hard. 11 mm-hmm. wins, insanely hard. Dan Mullen says that over and over again. Another thing to do is to have a good year four, like a good year three and a good year four, because maybe you're one of these guys who can come in and flip it, right? I can flip it. I can take this program. I can get the next job. But one of the hardest things is to sustain, because you have to commit down the road to being a monster recruiter, to having a system, to constantly replacing your staff, to constantly replacing your strategies and working ahead. It's relentless. And I don't blame anybody for falling off that curve. You know, I mean, I have crippling ADD. I assure you, I would be a flipper at best. My year three would be a nightmare. Year four, I'd be run out on a rail. And I think that's probably where you'll see, if Lane Kiffin matures as a coach, that's the part of the curve he's going to have to really work on in order to succeed. He's got to survive year three, and then he's got to get to year four. Because as time went on at USC, the big problem there, per most people involved, was management, right? It wasn't whether he was a talented coach.
Nope,
he's a, like, what did you see at Alabama? Dude will score. Dude knows what he's doing. Puts people in positions to succeed. If he has a player, by the way, who can carry the ball 5,000 times in a season, hello, Derrick Henry, they'll do it, right? If he has a quarterback who's troubled, there are multiple instances of, I will get this guy to work. I will put them in a position to succeed. So I don't worry about that. That's one reason they're so interesting to me this year, because he's not necessarily worried about, okay, this is my guy and I have to develop him. No, he just has to come in and make it work. And he's very good at that.
When you talk about things that are consistent in the league, I always bring up the fact of Coach Saban's mad level. Is there anything more consistent about how mad he is?
Yeah, that's another thing. How are you going to stay mad for 4 years? Okay. All right, how are you going to do what Nick Saban does? How are you going to stay mad for 14 years? You know how hard it is to stay mad or even fake mad for 14 years?
Yeah.
Like, you either got to start off being like Captain Cool and just keep it there, or you got to be like Nick and just maintain a low boil every single minute of every single day for 14 years. Mm. And I don't understand how you do that, particularly when, after multiple national title games, there have been anecdotes of Nick Saban sitting in the cabin of the plane on the way back going, oh, cool, I can get to recruiting.
Yeah.
What?
Breakfast meetings the day after, talking about all the things they can do better, man. Like, that's a Daniel Day-Lewis method acting level that I cannot even comprehend. And I do think, and I'm really glad, we had Nick on the show during the midst of the shutdown, and he talked about Miss Terry and spending time together in ways that was meaningful, and about family. And a number of people commented about just seeing the human side. It is in there. You know that, Spencer. Steve and I know that. We know that. There's a guy there. But it's a commitment to that, not character, because I'm not suggesting it's a role he's playing. He inhabits it. It seems like that fire would burn me out. Like, you talk about year three, you'd be out on a rail. I couldn't pretend to be that pissed off for a week.
No.
I would self-immolate in instantly, like, so I guess on some odd level I admire it, but I also just feel like I would never want to be that committed to process that I didn't allow myself more joy in the result. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I don't, that's just different. Like, yeah. when you talk about dudes just different, people have tried to hire that away. You know, this is the Belichick difference. Like, when people talk about, well, what makes Belichick different? Why can't we just hire one of his guys?
There's one of them.
And you go, well, yeah. And you go, well, okay. First of all, I need you to go take a coach and make sure he's born in a film room, and that he is the son of the guy who wrote the book on football scouting. Something people tend to forget is that, you know, like, Bill Belichick's dad was the guy who wrote the literal book on how to scout a football game, right? I recommend doing it, by the way, but you can pad it. It's called padding. You just sit there and you go, like, you just go through, like, the check marks, and all of a sudden you realize, you go, oh, man, I am barely watching this game. I am just watching where the ball goes, and I am completely wrong about everything in football. It's a very humbling experience. Now, take someone who learned to do that as a kid and grew up in a film room, and then make sure that he gets a good 15 to 20 years of tutelage under a lot of really great people, including Bill Parcells. Oh, and then he, by the way, gets the apprenticeship right? He gets to see how you do everything and then ends up in the perfect situation, right? By the way, make sure you're willing to quit a job after, like, you don't even, like a day. Is that the Jets? Like, quit after a day because he's like, oh, God, I took the Jets job. Oh, no. Oh, God. What am I doing? I should go take the Pats job. Like, that's – you need a that's the reason that those guys are so sought after. They're very, very, very singular. And I also want to show this. Who has, like, the best record against Nick Saban in terms of SEC coaches? I think over the past, like, 5 to 7 years, if you add it up, it was Hugh Freeze.
And
one of the reasons that, you know, you can't beat Nick Saban by being Nick Saban. You have to do something else. You have to do something differently, right? And Hugh Freeze kind of played chaos ball. I don't want to take it out of, you know, completely out of his hands in terms of, like, what he achieved at Ole Miss on the field. But you can't try to be more organized or relentless than Nick Saban. You're going to have to play something, an entirely different kind of game. You'll have to get Chad Kelly back there, baby. Like, you need Chad Kelly back there just winging it, hoping it works out in man coverage.
All of this, and we haven't mentioned Leach and Mississippi State. I guess what I'm saying is that the endless depth of topics and interesting things to discuss about this league and your knowledge of it, Spencer, are why you'll be great with us on the SEC Network, Thinking Out Loud. What's going on just on the way out? Because my point here would be I could talk to you until tomorrow about this, and I assume you have things to do. Although, is virtual school done for the day? You're living through that, right?
Oh, yeah.
How's that going?
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I'm a bad person.
Yeah. I have a question about that.
Yeah.
Spencer, I'm just looking at your backdrop, and it reminds me of me in my house on Wednesdays. We're supposed to put our recycle bins, and I had to get another recycle bin because we fill ours up at our house. I don't know about you, more than we have before the pandemic started. And
I have the number, Steve. I called Montgomery County. I got several additional bins. They'll send them to you for free.
Okay. Yeah, because we're gonna need that.
I have become a wine aficionado, and I kept it to that. figuring that wine is very good for you.
And yeah, the grape.
And then if anyone says, but the Senate stops there, you
got
just
it.
Cut them off, right? I'm like, no, it's heart healthy.
Yeah, that's like, nice. It's good for you.
So how many glasses is heart healthy? I'm going to return to the statement. It is heart healthy.
There you go. Who are you to judge? Who are you to judge? I'm big. I lift a lot. I didn't go mad. I went. What's a bottle of wine a day? What is that?
Boad.
Boad. Bottle of wine a day. I want to know on the way out. What do we have? Shutdown forecast plans. What are we doing?
Yeah. So Shutdown Fullcast available. We record on Tuesdays. It goes up on Wednesdays. That is a weekly podcast. During the season, we'll go to twice a week.
Are you going to hit the road? Are you going to go places?
Oh, absolutely not. No, like we have no ability to safely put on a show in the best of times.
There have been some technical challenges. And I mean, I say this, I'm currently sitting down outside my house, and I put my computer into a power plug I found on the side of the garage. So I'm not judging your acumen technically. I'm just saying, and it's hard to take a show on the road, man.
Listen, it's hard to take any show on the road. And when you're as stupid as the full cast is, it's definitely more of a challenge. Like, you know, if you're going to be dumb, you got to be tough. And we're a very tough podcast.
Yeah.
But in a normal time, it would be challenging. And then this year, with all of the restrictions that you would have about putting on a live show, absolutely not. But we are steady on the internet and in your inbox and podcast provider of choice every Wednesday. And going to take that to two shows during the season, along with all the other stuff. I write from time to time at mooncrew.substack.com. That is a free newsletter. So if you don't like it, guess what? You spend a dollar. No, you spend zero. $0. It's zero.
And the fact that your words are free is galling. It should be monetized. You know how much we appreciate all of what you do. And to share it, look, we're in the content world, and you're doing your own podcast. So to spend a little time chit-chatting with us, you know, we appreciate. And we look forward to catching up on the TV soon, I hope. And folks will check you out on the SEC Network as well. Thinking Out Loud starting at the end of the month, Monday, the 28th of September. Spencer Hall, folks, be good, my brother. We will talk soon, okay?
Always a pleasure, y'all.
All right, Steve, so as we say so long to Spencer with the SEC schedule kicking off this week, I think that'll make it feel a little bit more like
we're not there.
But, no. I mean, let's be honest. Looking at these Saturday slates, and you're like, what do we got? Like, I will say it's been good just from the family perspective to not feel like I got to be lingering around a television for during that afternoon window. You know what I mean? You don't feel like you're conflicted or missing anything. But
are they coming to get you?
Hold on, I'm outside. We got
get to the chopper. Get to the chopper.
The one good thing about living in a flight path is my boys are both absolutely obsessed by airplanes. And, like, there's some afternoons where it's just they're flying international and it is one after another, man. I'm talking about conveyor belt, one after another. All right, the chopper's gone. What was I talking about? Football.
Yeah.
And having the SEC back will start to give us a little bit more of a feel. Obviously, we're a month away from the Big Ten trying to get things going. But 2 weeks into the NFL and – this week, Steve, the list of injured players was astounding. It was star players on both sides of the ball. You had a couple of number two picks in back-to-back drafts, Saquon and Bosa go down with ACLs, both of them. And, you know, it's turning into this cause and effect thing that everyone's like, well, see, this was bound to happen because blah, blah, blah. And you're like, well, I mean, last year, week two, Breeze got hurt, Roethlisberger got hurt, Cam Newton got hurt. Two of those guys didn't play again the rest of the year, mm-hmm. both of whom have played in Super Bowls and the most important position in the NFL. I'm not diminishing what happened because the list is voluminous and it is staggering and it's a ton of star players. But I caution anyone to say that it happened because it feels like it happens all the time every year. As you well know, having lived it, it's a violent game, you know?
It's part of the sport, Scott, and we'll never get the full effect. I think just being a guy that missed a lot of time with injuries in college, it is as taxing mentally as you possibly can get. It is as depressing a feeling knowing that you're playing in a sport and your team goes out to you hear everybody in their cleats walking out of the building and you're staying in the training room to rehab by yourself. You hear the whistles going. You hear the pads going. You see the guys coming back sweating, dripping, knowing that they put in a whole day work, and you're just sitting there helpless, just like, I don't even feel part of it. And it's not. And guys come up to you and come in the locker room and check with you, you know, how you doing. There's nothing that replaces that feeling when you're as isolated as that. And it's part of the deal, man. And you don't know about it until you live it. I really think – the special Stefania Bell did with Alex Smith gave a light to those people. I think you watch some of these documentaries that athletes do and you see what these guys put in. I understand it at the professional level. They're getting tons of money. But, man, you talk about being taxing, mentally with some alone time. If you're not ready, if you're not comfortable with yourself or you haven't had adversity like that with injuries – It's a rough deal, and I just think it's more light shed on it because of the fantasy stuff and like that. But it could be dark for those guys.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that because I did one big thing on this a year ago that a guy gets hurt, Saquon Barkley,
mm-hmm.
right? Takes it, runs right against the Bears, gets hit, going out of bounds, he's down, slow getting up, leaves in a cart. You see him banging the cart, leaving the field. You got some team that is make-believe. They only exist in your phone, on your computer screen, and you had the number two pick in the draft, and you picked him. And now you're like, oh, I got to get somebody. I got to pick somebody up on the waiver wire. That's make-believe. Yeah. It's a make-believe team. It's not a real thing. But the human being on the cart begins a process that will take the better part of a year. And then even then, once you get, and you would know, again, I haven't had this. Once you get cut, particularly on an ACL, for a guy who makes his living running the football, do you mentally ever feel the same? Do you trust it when you cut? Are you tentative? I mean, I think about the human toll And it's just, we, and this isn't, I'm not blaming people. It's just, it, but it's, I think about the person who's in the arena who now can't be, and what the, like, I talked to Tim Legler about coming back from an ACL, and he's like, man, it's a dark, dark time. You know, you struggle. I mean, when you played that, the last game of your career at the Rose Bowl, didn't you play with some contraption on your elbow just to be out there?
I dislocated my elbow against
Hold on a second. Listen, people listening, his elbow was dislocated. You understand that? His f-ing elbow was dislocated. Think about that. Think about how bad that hurt. Okay, carry on. So you said very casually, as if, oh, I stubbed my toe. Your elbow was dislocated, and then?
And then I didn't know what was wrong, so I ran off to the sidelines. And I honestly had no idea, but, like, I watched the replay one time of me running off the field. And, like, I don't know what – I think it was, like, my shoulder, I thought. And then all of a sudden the doctor was just like, doo-doo. And then, like, luckily they were able to pop it back. He knew right away. Because they showed the replay up on the Jumbotron, and it bent the wrong way, so it was crazy. Like, I literally, like, went to a knee, because I guess all the blood goes up for whatever, you get some kind of rush. But it was brutal. And then that was the last week of November, and then rehab to get back to play January 1, which is my birthday, against Wisconsin. With I wore if you see the brace, Jamal Lewis actually wore the brace. But it's the brace that J.J. Watt wears. He fills it out a lot better than I did.
It's like a arms, jungle gym on your arm.
Yeah, it was, you know, tossing and turning. It's a thing. And then I had a thing my freshman year. That was a whole nother deal. But with my neck and shoulder. But the issue, and going back to Legler, is the issue is the guy, you don't know how – whether you can go full go, because all you could think about is all the time you just put in to get to this point.
Right.
And I understand ACLs are nowhere near, you know, what they used to be, but still those guys are talking. I mean, a lot of times now they're going two times a day for, I don't know how many weeks, but you're just thinking about that time because you're alone, man. You have so many thoughts that are in your head when you're doing that stuff, and you just want to get to a point, but you know, you can't go too fast. Because it's just that's definitely not how to do it, because that's not the right way. And you listen to the people that are paid to tell you what to do. So there's things that have you from reaching, you know, your ceiling that are out of your control. If that makes any sense, you know,
of course.
Not going by the book, but there is a standard that you have to stay to. And that's really hard for guys that haven't faced adversity.
Yeah, and you just look at the toll this week, and there's, you know, like the Niners. I mean, you lose a Stanford guy in Thomas, and you lose Bosa, and you lost Buckner in the offseason. I mean, you're the face of the identity of that rugged defense totally changes. You have Mostert hurt on the offensive side. You have Coleman hurt. Garoppolo with a high ankle. I mean, that's just one team. That's one team. And I mean, afterwards, Coach Shanahan, I get it. I mean, you're frustrated as hell, and you're talking about the turf, and it was sticky and this and that, and thinking maybe that had something to do with it. But meanwhile, the Giants and the Steelers played on it 6 days before on Monday Night Football, and nothing happened. So I guess what I'm saying is that when we try to assign explanations for things that unfortunately are inherently arbitrary, I just resist that. And it's just, it sucks that for sure. And it's been an alarming rate of injury for sure to start this 2020 season. 2 weeks in, as far as the actual football on the field, I mean, I don't know. The Chiefs managed to win a game, which, I mean, that's going to haunt the Chargers. There were plays. Herbert, the rookie, made a bunch of big-time plays. But he also made a couple of – well, one significant mistake, up 8 with the ball, driving – throws across his body across the middle of the field, gets picked. And it still took a bunch of magician's nonsense from Mahomes and that Chiefs team to win, and Butker blasting like three consecutive 50-plus kicks. How about that? You think about all the things in football that have changed. In baseball, if you throw 100, that's still hard. But, like, back in the day, if you threw mid-90s, there was like one or two of those dudes. Now every team's got 7 or 8 guys.
Yeah.
Now 58-yard field goals for guys like Butker and Tucker and – I mean, if I
Zuerlein's game winner was a chip shot the other day.
Steve, for they him. Get that, they get that onside kick, and they went conservative. It was a 46-yard kick. Now, granted, it's indoors off of field turf, but for him, you called it. It's a chip shot. It's nothing crazy to that guy. And as far as, like, you know, just being accurate and becoming numb to the fact that you just don't miss kicks, Gostkowski had seasons where he didn't miss three kicks. And then he had a horrible Monday night game against Denver. But then what does he do? He makes a game winner, misses an extra points against Jacksonville, I beg your pardon, and hammers home a 40-plus yarder to win the game. That skill has become so elevated that I think we take that part of it for granted. But, Steven, the big picture, 2 weeks into an NFL season, saying anything definitively always feels a little bit ridiculous. Other than just Kansas City is going to be good and they're going to be hard to beat, as evidenced this past Sunday when the Chargers defense harassed Mahomes all day and still couldn't win. Outside of saying that, I don't really know what I'm and Baltimore's plenty good too. They play Monday night next week. That'll be a hell of a football game. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many things I'm prepared to say definitively about who's good. I think there are far more questions about teams that started poorly. Like, Minnesota looked horrible the other day. I don't know what the hell's going on with them. I feel like Chicago's 2-0. I don't
are they nobody
they're,
thinks they're
clearly
good.
The most well, I mean, look how they beat Detroit, and they had to survive the Giants without
just said, look
without
at their
Saquon.
Two wins.
I mean, you right who they beat and how they beat them. So I don't know. We don't ever know a whole lot. I do know that the Monday night game between the Ravens and the Chiefs is going to be good. And I think that the question marks about Breeze and his arm, given the Monday night game with Green Bay coming in, they've scored 40-something in two games. Like, I know this. Week 3's got some absolute bangers on the schedule.
Bangers.
Cowboys-Seahawks, yay, at the Patriots.
That matchup.
Chiefs, I don't have the schedule in front of me, but I'm just like, that's four off the top of my bean that are some interesting games here.
Rams-Bills.
This season. Yeah, go get them. 2-0. Goff and Allen threw for 400 and four touchdowns. Buffalo fans are like, you know, he's good. I don't know. Like, yeah, he looks good. Who the hell knows? I don't. I know this. In the time that we've been talking, we mentioned the COVID positives for Notre Dame, and now that game against Wake Forest has been postponed?
Correct.
Here we go.
Yeah, that was a winner this week for me, too. Love the over in that game.
Well, save it for later. Look, this is what Spencer talked about earlier. We just nothing about this year, nothing about this season is going to be easy. It's just we're going to put it on paper and we're going to hope that we get to play the games. That's where we are. You have any questions for me? Any Scott on the spot?
Yeah, I was going to ask you. Are the Packers
is this like when me and Marcello would get to the end and it was let me ask you a question and we'd look at each other in the break and see if we wrote anything? Yeah. All right, hold on. Got to do the production
intro.
Scott on the spot. Pew 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 pew. Skrillex. Wowie. Wow. Pew pew. Brought to you by Skrillex.
Are the Packers better than they were last year?
Yes. I don't know why.
Are the Ravens better than they were last year?
Maybe. They won 14 games last year?
Yeah.
They're not going to win 14 games this year. No. They won't be better in I you know what? I don't know. How about that? I don't know. Am I supposed to have a hot take? I don't know.
I appreciate the honesty.
Well, I don't know. The game against Houston was just on the other day. It was kind of hard to watch that one given the fact that we were very carefully monitoring the Chiefs and the Chargers game, and we were keeping an eye on the football team because I have Kyler Murray on a fantasy team, and that guy is bananas. I was wrong about him. Scott owns his mistakes. I was wrong. I thought he was just tiny and was you're not going to get to play against Texas Tech. You're not going to get to play against Baylor, Oklahoma State. All due respect to your fine defenses. It just what I'm saying is just bulk Big 12 quarterbacks, I was wrong. Because I thought for years that was nonsense, and it just because it didn't translate in the NFL, and now you got a bunch of Big 12 quarterbacks out there slinging it. And Murray, man, he is just hard to deal with. I interrupted your question.
All right. Are the Jets worse than they were last year?
Yes. Who's their wide receiver one? You draft Mims, he's hurt. They let Robbie Anderson go gobble for the Panthers. He's catching balls like
they
like
need nothing. To bring Corbett back. I bet you that guy could still play.
Where's Bilal Powell? I miss him. They that literally look at what happened to them. That Mims is not practicing. Yep.
Herndon, where's he?
He played last week. He didn't catch. I think he caught one pass. Perriman got hurt last week. Crowder was hurt before the game, so he didn't play.
I think Crowder got hurt on that long touchdown against
Bell.
Buffalo.
Bell goes on the IR early. You got Gase. He doesn't make it. He doesn't make it to Halloween at this pace. Seriously,
okay.
I'm not calling for the guy's head. I'm just telling you, it ain't gonna work. Not like this,
good.
Huh?
Don't look good.
No, it looks rough. Is that it? Bonus question on the way out.
Yeah. Trying to get someone in here.
He's looking up, which means he's thinking. This is 100% me and Rosillo at the end of a show, just making something up before it was 4 o'clock.
Have you ever changed a tire on a car?
Yeah.
I'm a man.
I'm a man, Steve.
Okay.
Like, where is it? Like, it's hard to find. Nowadays, it's like, you know. Back, and not only that, I changed it when it was a full on tire. When you had a full big ass proper tire in the back and a jack, which was like perilous because it was at any moment it was ready to give
just
way
slip
and
right off,
fall on your body and crush you to death.
And then you used it once and it was bent for life.
Exactly.
Do you have that bar that was like this? That's the key.
Without question, Steve's got his arms together. Right. And each
– long one, it would hit the ground too much.
Correct. And then each one of those was like for lug nuts. And there was always
lug nuts. I couldn't
There was always
that
one that was stripped.
Always.
It was hard. I don't know how we functioned, man. Like life was a lot harder.
You ever watch those NASCAR guys that could just spin it? It's incredible. It's
yeah, nuts. No, they're, that's a skill set I don't understand. I'm just trying to think how we lived before. It was a lot harder.
No phones. No podcasts.
It wasn't caveman times, but it might as well have been out there changing full tires with gigantic hunks of equipment that were
dirt all over you.
Just poorly designed for the thing, and I'm not built for it, but I did it. You want to know that I changed a tire? You're damn right I changed a tire.
All right. Bonus all one right. on the way out.
Last quick. One?
Yeah, okay. Last one. How was the burger?
I think it was pretty good. Old Ebbett Grill, right?
Yes.
By the way, I owe you money. Steve's been going out honchoing meal after meal after meal. And back in Connecticut, I put everybody on scholarship. I got lots of meals. Lately, down in D.C., I haven't reached in my pocket once. Actually, one time I threw $40 on the table, but yeah. I owe you a lot of money right now. So don't think I don't know that.
We'll get there.
Well, we will. But the burger was pretty good. Old Ebbett Grill. Check it out. Legendary D.C. spot. All right. That's it for the podcast. Thanks to Otis for being here to bark at whoever that guy was on the go-kart. Shout out to the chopper above. I hope everybody here is safe. And I hope everybody out there is doing great. Thanks for listening. It's SV Pod. We'll see you next week.